Welcome to the DMD edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're here at the 2025 MDA Clinical and Scientific Conference in Dallas, and our guest today is Dr. Catherine Matthews, co-director of the MDA Clinic at the University of Iowa. Dr. Matthews, a pediatric neurologist specializing in Duchenne muscular dystrophy, Friedreich ataxia, and several other rare diseases, leads the clinical project of the NIH-funded Wellstone Center at the University of Iowa. In addition, she's the winner of this year's MDA Legacy Award for Achievement in Clinical Research. In a statement issued by the MDA, Sharon Hesterly, the organization's chief research officer, said the following: Dr. Matthews has long been at the forefront of clinical research, particularly in documenting the natural history of several neuromuscular diseases and testing new therapies. Her groundbreaking work over the years and commitment to her patients continues to have a profound effect on the lives of patients and their families. Thank you so much for speaking to us, Dr. Matthews. It's an honor for us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
So congratulations on the award. And would you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
So I have always been at the University of Iowa. I started in doing bench research in fascioscapulohumeral, FSHD, and then transitioned to doing clinical research across a number of different diseases, as you mentioned. And I continue to do both clinical trials. I do epidemiologic research sponsored by the CDC and natural history studies sponsored by the NIH.
Tell us, if you would, in a sentence or two about this award and its significance on the 75th anniversary of the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
So this is a profound honor and totally unexpected. I've told several people that the award, I think goes to the stars in the field, and I'm more of a worker bee. I'm accepting this reward on the behalf of all of my colleagues who take care of patients, do clinical trials, and are committed to this population.
Wonderful. I recall at the opening keynote, you mentioned that it's unusual for a researcher such as yourself to remain at one institution for so many years.
That is true. It is something that we are counseled against in our early training, that if you really want to be successful in academic medicine, you need to travel to different institutions.
So how is it that your entire career has been at Iowa? You mentioned something that it suits you personally.
So I have family commitments, and so that is part of why I've stayed at Iowa. And at each time that I looked at other options, I looked at what was available at Iowa, my mentors, my training environment, and what was available elsewhere. And I felt like I would have been uprooting my family and traveling solely for the purpose of changing environments rather than because my training would be better. And I think because I've always been at Iowa, I have strong connections across departments, across different parts of the university, and so I've been able to do things that I might not have been able to do had I moved frequently.
Understood. So your focus is on dystroglycanopathies.
My NIH-funded project with the Iowa Wellstone Center is a natural history study of people with dystroglycanopathies, yes.
Can you explain in layman's terms what this is?
So it's a group of rare diseases that rare muscular dystrophies that are the result of a lack of glucose molecules put on one part of a molecule called alpha-dystroglycan that is required to stabilize the muscle membrane and prevent it from breaking down with exercise or normal activity.
And you began your work with FSHD.
That is correct.
Why so?
My mentor was a expert on chromosome 4, and we were mapping chromosome 4, and FSHD had just been mapped to someplace on chromosome 4, and so it was a natural fit.
But you started out doing research with mouse models.
We started out with a mouse that we thought might be a model for FSHD, and turned out it was not a model for FSHD. It was a model for a different muscular dystrophy.
Mm-hmm. And then you also went on to study limb girdle muscular dystrophy, and I understand that study was led by Dr. Jerry Mendell.
So, many years ago, before we could do the genetic testing for lots of limb-girdle muscular dystrophies, Dr. Mendell was interested in the relative frequencies of different forms of limb-girdle muscular dystrophy. And so using the best available technology at the time, it was a study to find out what is the national representation of different limb-girdle muscular dystrophies.
And so you never really expected to do clinical trials in neuromuscular disease, right?
That is correct. So when I first started doing neuromuscular disease, first of all, there were no clinical trials. When I was training, the idea of working with a pharmaceutical company to try to bring a trial to market was not something we had any exposure to, and there was a great deal of concern during the time of my training about undue influence from close relationships with pharmaceutical companies.
Mm-hmm. So in 2001, you mentioned that the MD Care Act was passed. Why was that such a significance for you?
It was of huge significance to our patient population because it mandated that funds be spent on trying to change trajectories in muscular dystrophies. And two of the ways that that was operationalized were that MD StarNet was created by the CDC, and that there was a network of Wellstone centers created. And I was fortunate enough to be involved with both of those, both MD StarNet and the Wellstone centers.
Okay, and 4 years after this act was passed, you got your first funding from NIH.
Our first Wellstone Center was funded in 2005.
And at that time, very little was known about these dystroglycanopathies.
That is correct.
So can you just walk us quickly through this, how you kind of made this important and basically put it on the map of clinical research?
So Wellstone Center has a basic science component, and that's run at our institution by Kevin Campbell, and a clinical component and a resource component, and that's run by Steve Moore at our institution. It's a biorepository. Our center was interested in learning more about this group of diseases. So Dr. Campbell was studying the basic science of them, and I was learning what is the course of the disease for somebody who has them. And I was interested in large part because we can't design a clinical trial and try to change the trajectory of these diseases unless we know what happens in the untreated situation.
Or in other words, the natural history of the disease.
Correct.
Yes. And you kind of alluded to this, but you said that you felt that the only way you could change the trajectory of these diseases is to do clinical trials.
It is not possible for an academic to do a clinical trial of a novel compound. We just don't have the resources, and the pharmaceutical companies do. So clinical trials directed by pharmaceutical companies are the only way that we can actually test potential therapies in humans and see if they work.
Wonderful. We have 1 minute remaining. I wanted to ask about the future of clinical research at the university level, given the current situation with regards to NIH.
Whoa. It is very tenuous, I would say. I worry greatly about the pipeline. Our graduate students and trainees are not going to want to do this work, and our experienced investigators are at great risk of not being able to continue their work in the current environment.
Is that because of the funding cap?
That is because of a whole range of things. The potential for cutting the overhead, the fact that the NIH is not holding the required federally mandated meetings that are required in order to determine who gets funding. So people are sitting in limbo and don't know whether or not they are going to be funded. So they're having to let lab personnel go because they don't have the funds and they don't know whether they're going to keep the funds.
Is that affecting you, you personally at the University of Iowa?
Me personally, not yet, but we do have our Wellstone Center is under review for renewal for another 5 years, and the council has not been able to meet to determine whether or not it's going to be renewed.
I understand. We're unfortunately out of time. It's very interesting. Once again, congratulations from Rare Disease Advisor on your award. We've been speaking with Dr. Catherine Matthews, co-director of the MDA Clinic at the University of Iowa and recipient of the 2025 MDA Legacy Award for Achievement in Clinical Research. Thank you so much.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.